If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio!
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. I'm here with a guest who is new to the podcast, but definitely not new to the local music scene. I mean, I think I've listened to various projects that you've been in over the years, and there's obviously a reason we're here today is to talk about an exciting new release that's coming out the day people hear this episode. So I think the best way to start this off is if you want to introduce yourself and give a bit of background about what it is you do as an artist, and then we can kind of get into the release and what's going on now.
Sure. My name's Carrie Latimer. I'm in a band called Leaf Rapids, and Leaf Rapids kind of formed out of another old band called Nathan that I was in years ago. And I've been in Winnipeg. I moved here from Alberta and BC, geez, like over 30 years ago, I think. So okay. I call myself a Winnipegger.
I think that counts. I think you've had enough tenure in Winnipeg that it counts. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, how many years is it before you become a full-fledged Winnipegger?
yeah, you probably need a few decades at least, and you're there. I think you're there.
Yeah, right on. yeah, I love it here. I would probably not be a musician if not for the generosity and just the collaborative nature of Winnipeg musicians. It's different than anywhere else I've lived.
For sure. And I think that you play a style of music, too, that is very... has a very strong community here in Winnipeg and across Manitoba, really. I mean, I feel like anything within sort of the larger folk umbrella had a roots Americana, folk, bluegrass, blues, all of that stuff. It really has a very strong following and very strong just roster of musicians here in the city.
Yeah, big roster of musicians and huge supporters in the community. House concerts,
yeah.
and funding. It's just unbelievable.
So Leaf Rapids, how long has that actually been an active unit? Because, I mean, I remember being from Nathan. I saw Nathan live a few times. I have a few of the albums. Leaf Rapids, I knew of your existence, and I've heard a few songs here and there, but I really only got up to speed in a big way sort of preparing for this interview. So what is the timeline of Leaf Rapids as an entity?
I don't know the exact year. I'm not one of those people who remembers the years.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, let's say 2005, I think maybe we put it, is it even that? No, probably 2015.
Okay.
Anyway, after Nathan busted up, we were approached by Steve Dawson from Black Hen Music, if we wanted to be on his label, and he asked us if we had some songs ready, and we can make a new project. And we said, yes, we do have some songs ready, and immediately started writing songs. And went to Nashville and recorded a record with him. It was a good kick in the butt to get another project going because we wanted to keep going. And yeah, Shelley Marshall's got her doctorate in nursing, and she's doing a lot of really good work in the forming public policy.
Cool.
And Damon's got kids. And so, yeah, people weren't touring as much. So Leaf Rapids has been around for 10 years now, I guess.
That's a pretty good run already. And this is your third record coming up?
Yeah, this is our third. This is the most special because we have Chris Dunn and Joanna Miller just fully collaborating in the record. And it's a four-piece unit now instead of we were doing it as a duo for a while, Dan and I.
So does the, I mean, obviously, you know, despite doing it as a duo before this, you've had all kinds of collaborators who've worked on the previous albums and worked with you before, including some familiar names and faces, I'm sure, to people who have seen your other projects over the years. But is the sound, do you feel like the sound has changed since you've sort of officially made it a four-piece? Is there sort of a notable difference to you? Or is it still just a continuation of the same thing?
I feel like it's changed a lot. I think it's a really gelled sound. It has a more developed sound, definitely. And you can hear everybody's personalities, I think, on this record. And it feels, I feel like on the last couple of Leaf Rapids records, we were sort of drifting around and searching for sounds, and it wasn't very cohesive. And we did have a lot of guests, and maybe it's not a terrible thing that it wasn't cohesive, because we kind of let every song take their own direction. But I do love the sound of the band in this. It feels really, I don't know, kind of special. It's cool. Not about me anymore, so I like that.
Does that help with the just sort of the overall songwriting and everything too? Knowing that it's not just a duo with extras, it's actually like an established unit.
Yeah, it was I had a bit of COVID brain just down in the dumps. Couldn't really find inspiring things to write about, and I was struggling. I think I needed a kick in the butt. We had a deadline coming with Manitoba Film and Music. They were pretty much saying, record this record or give our funding back. And so we booked some dates, and then luckily my brain kicked in. So it was really nice recording it, though. And like you said, the pressure felt like it was off, because I knew that we just had to do our thing and we didn't need to. I think I felt like we were trying to be bigger because it was just Devin and I. So we'd get Alexa Derricks to come and sing, and we had Slow Leaves, and we were trying all these different things and having lots of guests. And for this one, it was just like, okay, we have our people and they're amazing, and let's just play the songs and let the songs speak. And yeah, so it felt, I think, just even the process of being relaxed and trusting everybody else just made it work.
How long have these songs been in the works? I think I read that this was actually like recorded and everything last year, right?
Yeah, in December, actually. So we booked 2 weeks in the studio, and then we were going to mix after that. But actually, after about a week and a day, like maybe six or seven days, we were finished tracking. And
oh, cool.
We didn't really, it kind of felt like, oh, we don't want to mess with this too much. Let's start mixing. And so we didn't even use up all of our time we had allotted for tracking. And we used a lot of sort of live off the floor sound, and it, I totally veered away.
No, it's cool. It's cool.
When did we do it? We did it in December.
Yeah. And so, like, I guess maybe a better way of rephrasing the question is, like, how long have these songs been sort of, how long have you been working on these songs? And the reason I ask is because, you know, like you mentioned, COVID, you have a gas mask behind you in the background when we're talking here. It's making me think of it. How did the pandemic affect sort of the timeline for making this record? Or is this something that came to fruition sort of after COVID was petered out?
Most of it was after I was working. I think there was one song called Starling to a Starling that went through about 58 iterations over the span of COVID. And it switched genres. It switched lyrics. It was all over the place. And I think I was just, I was trying to guide it. And then, so a lot of the songs actually were written recently.
Okay.
Yeah, and I wrote I wrote Velvet Paintings maybe last summer, because I sang it on the porch for some people, and Corin Raymond was over for a barbecue, and he's a songwriter I really love and respect.
Great songwriter, yeah.
Yeah, and he just gave me some very nice words about it, so I felt sort of like I had a pat on the back to keep going, and yeah, that kind of kicked me into gear. But yeah, a lot of them were, even a few of them were written the week before we got in the studio, because I was starting to panic.
Well, it sounds like you didn't need to panic. It sounds like it worked out, everything worked out better than you expected,
yeah.
Right?
I think you just said it. I'm one of those people that if a deadline is set, I will get it done.
Yeah.
With a bit of panic.
Right. Well, it helps, right? Panic sometimes helps to make it actually happen.
Are you like that too? Or are you an organized person?
No, I like my day job is in journalism. So everything I do is extremely tight deadlines and extremely panicked. So yeah, I definitely...
Yeah.
As spur of the moment, like just go with it. I think there's you can develop an art to that. I think making that work every time.
Yeah, like I think I need that deadline. Maybe that's what it was over the pandemic. There just wasn't.
Yeah, there's nothing
really
to work towards.
Yeah, floating around in this weird foggy waxy haze.
Yeah, for sure.
Is it so hard to love? It's a miracle we're here at all. Why is it so hard to love? Walking down Broadway, minding myself, suddenly I'm hearing Highway to Hell. Stop dead in my tracks. Here's a sound. My silver fillings are sometimes receivers. First time it happened, thought it was Jesus. Funny the things that can lead to salvation. Holes in my teeth and a radio station. Sometimes it's news with the who's killing. It's a miracle we're here at all. Why is it so hard to
This is a question everyone hates answering, and I hate asking it, but it's I feel like these days everyone wants to pigeonhole everyone's music into a certain category. And there's so many now, there's all these subcategories and genres that didn't exist 10 years ago or 5 years ago. How do you define this? I mean, I feel like Americana probably works, but do you have sort of a more precise way to define what you do?
I like the Americana because it's not country. There's we've got some sort of old country sounds. Joanna Miller wrote an amazing kind of pop sound. But when I was playing around with SubmitHub. Have you ever tried, or do you know about that?
I don't think so.
It's a website where you can submit your songs for playlists and stuff.
Okay.
And so there's Spotify playlists, there's blogs. I'm not sure what I think about it, but when you hit the what is my genre, it brings up Americana and folk, indie folk. So I guess it's kind of in there. I like Canadiana, someone called us.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is the difference then between Canadiana and Americana? Because I can see how that could be a separate genre because, I mean, there is a difference, but what do you think is sort of the, is it the subject matter that maybe is a differentiator?
I wonder, yeah, I wonder about that too. Maybe it's just because we don't like to be lumped in with Americans too much.
Yeah, our whole culture is about not being American for sure, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely roots. We definitely have a roots, and especially with this album, we only have a few guests. We have some strings, Nathaniel. Elise Tess is playing cello, and JP Peters, who produced the album, is actually playing some beautiful violin. I didn't even know he could play violin, but he's wonderful. And then we have keys from Jeff Hillhorse from Deep Dark Woods, who I love that band.
Cool.
And so he sent some tracks in. And other than that, it's just us. And so, and we let kind of, I guess, writing for this one, I wanted to give lots of space for Chris Dunn to do his thing on guitar too. So
cool.
And he's got that rootsy country flavor to his playing.
But yeah, it's definitely not a country record, and you're not a country band, but there's that a little bit of that kind of sneaks in, right?
Yeah. Did you hear the preview of
the
album?
Yeah, it sounds great. And awesome. One thing I wanted to ask you about the album actually is I kind of feel this way from your other stuff too, but it definitely has kind of a I don't know what the word is for it. Like almost like a dreamy vibe to it. Like the whole thing feels very, not sleepy, because sleepy seems bad, but dreamlike. It seems very kind of like it sort of lulls you into some kind of weird headspace in a good way, if that makes sense. I don't know how to explain it other than dreamy, I guess, is the way to do it. Is that something that you hear in this music as well? Like a sort of a, I wish I had a better word than dreamlike, but that's what's coming to mind.
I love the word dreamlike. I think that's really, I take that all as compliments. Yeah, and even the weird, putting you in a weird headspace is good. Putting you in any kind of headspace is nice. I like that a lot. It is kind of dreamy. And now I'm just thinking about that. But yeah, for sure. And especially like in the woods with JP, was so fun to record with. And I would go in there when he was mixing, and he just plays with the delay. Like he's using the delay knobs almost like an instrument, and he's just taking a sound and just stretching things and doing like morphing things in the background. And then I'd also hear like, was that a fiddle part? Or I mean, a violin part just way back. Like I'd hear all these kind of really subtle things if I put my headphones on, and I just loved the surprises he would bring. And so he for sure added an excellent dreamy quality, which totally, yeah.
Cool.
He was kind of the fifth member of our band in that.
Well, it's always interesting when you have someone who's producing it who can add that, who can turn the studio into an instrument, because it definitely, it's a different way to you know, complement the sounds that are on the album.
And he doesn't overdo it. He knew exactly where to do it, and he kept us all so relaxed, and he didn't like dick around with sounds. And because a lot of times, I remember when I first started in studios, it felt like a lot of it was them trying to find the right mic spot for the guitar, and it seemed to take so long. But I would think I was more nervous then too, so time worked differently in my mind. But I remember it just being quite a nerve-wracking experience. But
this one wasn't, though.
A mixture of experience and a mixture of awesome JP is just, yeah.
And he's recorded with everyone. I mean, his resume is crazy. Just the kind of a wide range of different types of artists he's had that he's worked with.
Yeah, he's got such good ears. I actually met him through that Middle of Nowhere project did with Rusty, and he and JP mixed that one, and I was like, "Ooh, this guy's got some skills."
Well, that I have that CD, and that was just a one-off, right? That was just like a one-time recording thing.
Yeah, yeah. We went into the woods for 7 days and wrote 9 songs and recorded them. It was intense.
Yeah, and that's like a definitely an all-star lineup of local roots musicians too. It's crazy.
It was really, really fun.
Cool. You know, I just thinking back about the dreamlike thing, I think maybe a better way to describe it, because I'm trying to find a way that makes me seem like I actually know what I'm talking about, is that it's maybe more, it's kind of absorbing. Like, I feel like from start to finish, it kind of sucks you into listening. I think you mentioned headphones before too, and I think it maybe seems like one of those records that lends itself to close listening on headphones rather than having a blasting on a stereo, if that makes sense. Is that how you feel about it? Do you think it's something that is sort of meant for that intimate sort of listening?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know if we intended to do that, but there's definitely, like, I think the way it starts too, it just feels like, yeah, you're in someone's head, and yeah, I like that. Intimate is a good description.
Well, how does that translate to live shows then? I mean, because, I mean, I guess we should mention you have a tour coming up in support of this record, and obviously, you know, the type of music you play, it lends itself to things like house shows and more that kind of intimate venue. But how does it translate live? Have you played any of these songs live beforehand, or are they all sort of new for this tour?
We played a few times. We actually had a kind of a sneaky show in December, I think, even like the week after we finished recording.
Okay.
We wanted to shoot some live video so we could start kind of promoting that to festival directors. And we only have one, I think we kind of released. Fast Romantics is on YouTube if you dig around a bit. But yeah, so we learned them for that, and we've been playing them, yeah, just a few times though in town. And also we had a really long rehearsal at the Burton Cummings Theater 2 days ago because we were part of this live sound workshop for the women in music.
Oh, cool.
And so for their guinea pigs on the stage so they could do sound for us, and we ran through everything. That was a really good rehearsal to have in a really nice venue.
Yeah, it's a really nice venue for sure. Is that, I mean, as far as the size of the venue, is that somewhere that you guys feel comfortable playing, or would you rather have the smaller, kind of more intimate venues? Because that thing is, I mean, even just looking up from the stage, looking down at the stage, it's so tall. It's so high, right? So does that work for your sound, do you think?
It kind of feels intimate there because it's all so closed in. And
right.
Yeah, we opened for Bobby McFerrin at the Jazz Fest a few years ago. And it was, yeah, sort of partly terrifying but really exciting. And yeah, I was a bit of a spaz on stage, I'll admit.
Well, you don't get that many chances to play the Burton Cummings Theater, right? So you might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah, exactly. It felt really special, and yeah, but which makes it a little more nerve-wracking. But yeah. It did have an intimate feel, and I felt like the audience was right there with us, and you can see everybody.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just a straight up vertical seats. Yeah. So this is kicking off with a local show, right? The tour.
Yeah. We're kicking off the tour. We heard it was wise to do one after you got back from tour, but this was the available date, so we took it.
So what are the details of the show?
It's this Friday. There's a 7 o'clock show and a 10 o'clock show because we have kind of different audiences. So the 10 o'clock one, actually Knob and Tube, which are Chris and Joe from our band, they have a duo. Well, it's actually a trio with Jill Fournier, but Jill can't make it, I don't think, so it's Knob Tube.
Okay. Jill, no and.
Yeah. And they have these beautiful songs they sing. It's like they're so talented on their own, and nobody really gets a chance to hear them very often. They don't really play out. But Leaf Rapids always makes them play when we go on the road and play a few songs. We like to feature them. And then the second show, so it'll be Knob Tube and Leaf Rapids on the first 7 o'clock show. And then we kick everyone out for the 10 o'clock show, except some people told me they bought tickets for both, which is so sweet. And that'll be us. And then the Perpetrators are going to close the night off at the end, and we can drink some beer and party and relax.
That's kind of cool, having you guys as the openers for the second show. And that's an interesting way of doing it, yeah.
We like doing that. Yeah. We're old.
Does the set change? I mean, is it a different set? Do you tailor the set, I guess, for the... I imagine the second one's more of a raucous show just anyway. I mean, the Perpetrators help, right? Is the set tweaked at all, or are you playing essentially the same thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll have a sort of a... what's the word? A reservoir of songs we'll dip into and see what the crowd is doing. If everyone's dancing, maybe we won't play some of our slower, depressing songs in the second one. But we also have a lot of really amazing guests for both.
Cool.
Nat is going to play cello and JP's going to bring his violin and Bill Western's. Oh, I forgot to mention Bill Western's playing pedal steel on a few songs on the record and he's playing both sets too. So yeah, we definitely want to feature all of those people.
I think the pedal steel adds a lot to the...
on the stage. Sorry.
I was going to say, I think the pedal steel adds a lot to the dreamlike quality of it too. That's an instrument that definitely has that kind of dreamy vibe to it.
Yeah, I love the pedal steel. Bill Western plays so beautifully.
Well, that's another person who's played with everybody too, right? I mean, he has a crazy resume as well.
Yeah, and he's played with Nathan, and he played on a couple of, one or two of our Leaf Rapids ones too. And
cool.
I won't call you the moon when every morning it goes away. I would not compare you to a flower's bloom, a moment's glory only to fade. On my lips to thrill so briefly then disappear. To me you are a sonnet form, my soul to dance within. In this way we
how do people find this record? I mean, by the time this comes out, if someone's listening on the day the episode comes out, the record will have just been released. It's a podcast, though. Someone could be listening a year from now. What's the best way to find your music, just sort of in general?
Well, I guess the best way would be to go to leafrapids.org, and then that'll point you in all directions. If you like Bandcamp, we're on there. If you, I think it's on every other streaming site and and probably not in any record stores because I don't know if those exist anymore.
There's a few of the stragglers that are hanging on. Yeah, well, I mean, you are putting out physical copies of this too, right?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we've made some vinyl and we made some CDs and we have even some T-shirts, hopefully, and baseball caps,
oh, cool.
Trucker caps, if they get here on time. I'm very last minute, so I have my fingers crossed.
Do you find that? I mean, I'm definitely among the audience of people who listen still to physical media. I don't know how to use Spotify or any of that stuff. I still records, tapes, CDs. But do you feel like the style of music you play lends itself more to people who want physical media? Because I think there's some genres where that's just out of the question. Everyone just wants to do streaming. But I feel like, you know, with any kind of folk Americana, whatever you want to call it, roots music, there's a lot of festivals and those type of events where there's a lot of sort of, not like markets, but a market kind of vibe, right? Where people are going up and meeting the band and talking and hanging out. And do you feel like that the physical records are still sort of part of your scene?
That's a really good question. It changes so drastically. It feels like every time we go on tour, I know when we went to Europe, but that was 5 years ago, we were selling more CDs there,
okay,
and we're lugging our vinyl around, although we didn't bring too many because we weren't sure and they're heavy. But yeah, I don't know. And now I feel like even at festivals, the CDs don't really go too much. So I'm going to find out, I guess. We made everything just in case.
Yeah, it's a good strategy for sure. So where do you go after Winnipeg, after the hometown show? Where were you headed on tour?
Yeah, we're going, we play a show in Inglis, Manitoba, and then we go Regina, Edmonton, Calgary, and they called it, I think they changed the name to Diamond Valley, Black Diamond.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a really good show. And then we play it again back in Calgary at the Ironwood. And that's it. That's our big tour.
Cool. And, you know, you mentioned the website earlier. Obviously, that's where people can find all the stuff. What's the best way to sort of follow you? I mean, is there social media or anything you want to plug that people should follow you on to find out what's going on with the band, you know, the various tour stops and things like that?
I think I would just encourage everybody to follow and like and subscribe to like all their favorite bands' social media things, because we're all trying to apply for grants and get into festivals, and all those numbers seem weird, but they actually help as far as just, yeah, I think that's a nice free thing you can do if you're listening to people's music on streaming. Just like and follow all the things and
yeah, because it helps in this weird dystopian future we live in to get people shows.
Yeah, click those buttons and...
Right on. Awesome. Okay, and then I guess the one last thing I wanted to ask you too is, what is the, I mean, I know it's a song title, but what's the significance of the album title? Why did you choose that as the title of the album?
Yeah, Velvet Paintings kind of sounds like a collection of weird paintings. And my parents actually had these two velvet paintings of the crying clown and the sad, the happy clown and the sad clown above the stairwell going to the basement. And they always creeped me out. They were so creepy. And they just kind of stayed in my mind. And when I wrote the song, Velvet Painting, I was kind of, they were kind of in my mind. And I just thought of the world as this sort of really weird, dark, creepy place. And then, yeah, it just seemed to suit the record. And I kind of like Velvet Paintings.
As long as there's not the creepy clowns, right?
Them actually.
When I get my shit together,